From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Marijuana has been legal in Illinois for medicinal purposes since 2013, but it was only in 2020 that recreational use became legal here. Illinois was the first state to legalize marijuana through its legislature rather than through a ballot referendum, and lawmakers were deliberate in how they went about it. Here's Governor J.B. Pritzker in late 2019.
The purpose of this legislation is not to immediately make cannabis widely available or to maximize product on the shelves. That's not the main purpose. That will come with time. But instead, the defining purpose of legalization is to maximize equity for generations to come.
So is Illinois delivering on that promise? Since recreational use became legal at the start of 2020, Illinoisans have spent more than $2 billion on cannabis. That's billion with a B. With that figure nearly doubling from 2020 to 2021. Jonah Rapino is with New Era Cannabis.
2021 was very good for the Illinois cannabis industry as well as for New Era. So, you know, we saw in our retail, we saw an increase of 26% in revenue in 2021 at the three locations that were open in 2020. And so that was our Chicago, East Peoria, and Urbana. But we did see a 44% increase overall.
All right. Thanks to Illinois Public Media News' Dana Cronin for that audio. And those increased sales are also benefiting the state and local governments, which are raking in sales taxes. But there have been delays in implementing some of the equity aspects of the legislation, particularly when it comes to licenses. Joining us to talk about Illinois' cannabis revenue and where it's going, as well as the licensing issue, is Tom Shuba. He's a reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times who covers marijuana. Tom, welcome back to the 21st.
Hey, how are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing well. Thanks for being here. And another aspect of legalization in Illinois aimed at reinvesting in communities that were disproportionately affected by the war on drugs and its associated violence and incarceration. And joining us to talk about that aspect of the law is Dr. Jarmise Sherrod. She's the president and CEO of Sherrod's Independent Mentoring Program. It goes by SIMP. Inc., which received a grant under that program. She's also a professor of English at Richland Community College, has a PhD in education, instruction, and curriculum. Welcome, Dr. Sherrod. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, you can join our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. If you have a question for our guests or a comment, maybe you have an experience with the recreational marijuana industry you would like to talk about, or maybe you're involved with one of these programs that's tried to or has gotten a grant under the R3 program. We'll talk more about that. 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455, or you can tweet us at 21st Show, at 21ST Show. All right, so Tom, let's break down that money. Can you talk a little bit more about the money, the spend that Illinoisans have been doing on recreational marijuana in the last 2 years, at least the ones, you know, the stuff that we know about that's taxed and regulated?
Yeah, well, this year, we just got the numbers, I think last week, the total was $1.38 billion through recreational sales, which was far more than the inaugural year, which I think was about $600 million. So, you know, I think as people are getting more and more comfortable with, maybe switching over from their old weed dealer to, you know, stepping into these stores and maybe biting the bullet a little bit around how much these products cost, the sales have just kind of increased pretty much steadily month to month. Sometimes there's a little step back, but it's kind of just been steadily moving up and up every month in terms of sales.
Sure. And I mean, you mentioned the prices, right? There's some sticker shock, I think, when people go to buy these things, I've heard. And it's a lot more expensive in the dispensaries than it is on the street. So why do you think, what do you think is behind that aspect of it?
I think people, you know, we're consumers. We're attuned to going into a store, having a shopping experience, being able to ask some people questions about, oh, well, you know, I heard about this. You know, do you have this sort of pre-roll? I heard that's good. Oh, no, but we have this. You might like this. That sort of shopping experience, I think, is nice. People, I think, also like to have the confidence that the products have been tested, that they're safe, and probably that they're, you know, high quality and well-made, and they're getting what they paid for.
And do you have a sense that the pandemic affected these sales? I mean, I think I saw, was in your story or somewhere else, that the state is getting more money from taxes on cannabis than it does from alcohol sales. That was remarkable to me when I read that.
Yeah, I mean, that is the case recently, that we're bringing in more revenues from weed sales than alcohol sales. The tax rates are a bit different. Alcohol is a little complicated to tally up. So it's not, you know, a strict apples to apples sort of comparison. But, you know, I've certainly read that people are relying on weed a bit more, that they're stuck in the house, you know, rather than, you know, maybe their old habits of going out after work on Friday night, you know, at 5 o'clock and having drinks and going to dinner and hanging out for the evening, you know, if you're stuck in the house watching Netflix for the umpteenth week, you know, maybe pack long and get to bed early.
All right, fair enough. Then let's turn then from the sort of you know, sales and consumer end of things to the Restore, Reinvest, and Renew program, R3. It's known. Can you talk about what is that?
So Restore, Reinvest, and Renew is kind of the cornerstone, one of the cornerstones of Pritzker and Co.'s legalization efforts. And basically the R3 program takes a quarter of this new novel state excise tax on recreational cannabis, and it uses it basically to try to fund programs in communities that were most adversely affected by past drug enforcement. So ostensibly what it's trying to do is undo the harms that were done by the drug war and by, you know, cannabis being illegal. And as of, I guess it was through the end of November, $74 million had been put into that pool, which is a huge amount of money. And a lot of that money had been doled out through grants. And now we have Pritzker last month announcing that they're doing another round of this with another $45 million through grant funding. So it's, you know, it's something that in terms of their equity plans, which have been railroaded by this stymied licensing initiative, this is the kind of the one big thing that's been done well, and that they're kind of, things are going mostly according to plans.
All right, so let's dig in then to what one of these groups that is supposed to be benefiting from this program, and I'm going to bring Dr. Jamrish Sharad into our conversation now. Can you talk what is SIMP Incorporated? What do you do? Why is it important to the community?
Well, Sharad's Independent Mentoring Program, which is SIMP Inc., it will be turning 20 years old actually this year. And so I've spent the last 20 years working with many leaders, community leaders between Chicago and Decatur, Illinois, even in Germany, working with youth development, empowerment, leadership. And we do a lot of mentoring, academic advising as well. Basically, we service children, youth, and adults to help them reach their next level of success.
And can you talk about the process of getting the R3 grant? How did you first come to find out about it? How did you go about trying to win that grant?
Well, actually, it was something unique. I'm a small business, had very few employees when I started. Didn't think I could even, as they say, wrestle with the big dogs on a grant like this. I end up happened to look online, found the information, looked at it, and just on the whims, I said, I'm going to put my head in the ring and I'm going to see if I could be one of the people who can earn the opportunity to work with this grant. And so when I did, I thought and envisioned, hey, I would love to do youth development, a reentry program, and also a violence prevention program. And so I got with a couple of people in our community, and I just said, let's try to envision the biggest thing that we visit. Impact that we can make in Macon County. And so youth development, we have college and career prep. We do lunch and learn programs where we bring community leaders inside of the high schools. We have an ASVAB military program, since I love working with military students. And then we also have a reentry program. We've been inside the Decatur Correctional Center for Women for years. And so we do empowerment right now. We're virtually because of the pandemic. So we meet with women twice a month with that program. And we have a curriculum set for that. But the biggest thing that I think that has really got a lot of buzz out of our program is the violence prevention. And we started with the Decatur Police Department with our current, police chief, and also which is our Chief Brendale and Sergeant Rosenberry. And I thought when I went to the Decatur Police Department and said, hey, we want a program, the community needs a program that does school-based violence prevention, community-based violence prevention. And when I started with that one police department, I then went to every police department on a tour throughout Macon County, and every last police department jumped on board. And so we have been doing violence prevention, Leo, the violence prevention lion. We wrote a book together. It's just so many things that we're doing with this grant.
And I was in all that. I mean, how much of that is from the R3 grant in particular versus other funding you've had over the years?
This is 100% R3. 100% R3. When I wrote the grant, myself and Professor Hawkins, which is one of our co-partners with the grant as well, we both looked at the situation and said, this is what we wanted to do. And they allowed us to apply for those three areas to impact as many as we could in Decatur, Illinois. But we then took it and just maximized it, because we realized that this wasn't just a city problem. This was a county problem. And in order to solve the problem, we have to bring everybody to the table.
All right, let me just take a moment to remind listeners, if you're just joining us, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Dr. Jermise Sherrod, who runs a mentoring program in Macon County. It's called Sherrod's Independent Mentoring Program, or SIMP, Inc., S-I-M-P. And we're also speaking with Tom Shuba, who covers the state of legal marijuana in Illinois for the Chicago Sun-Times. And Tom, there have been some critiques of the R3 program, that some of the organizations are already well-established and wealthy, and, you know, it's not really a huge difference maker for them. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, there have been some big, kind of well-known institutions, like the Chicago Urban League has gotten a lot of money. And that's something that people who are involved in the R3 process have acknowledged, something that they're trying to address to make sure that smaller, more community-based organizations are getting a big piece of this pie. This summer, there was $3.5 million that was dispersed to different groups as part of an initiative based solely on addressing the historic uptick in summer violence. And in that round, you did see a lot of these smaller groups get money, as opposed to the first funding round. So I think that's an issue that's definitely been raised, but I think something that's, people who are behind the program are very cognizant of and are trying to find ways to address.
Dr. Sherrod, I wonder if you have a reaction to that. You know, I think one of the other organizations cited was the Chicago Community Trust, which already has billions of dollars. Maybe this grant not a difference maker. Do you think the state's sending the money to the right places?
Well, I can only speak as far as what I've seen. Part of the cohort that we're in, we get to meet and we got to go through different trainings and stuff. So I've only been able to see some of the people that's benefited. I was one of the ones that requested that we all communicate and talk so that we could get a chance to know each other and support each other throughout the year. I'm not for sure, as I look at the list of all of the big corporations, I'm happy everybody got funding. But what I'm definitely happy is is somebody like me, a very small business, looking at this situation is never thinking that I would be able to even qualify for something of this magnitude, being given an opportunity to shine. And one of the things that I made sure that I've always said is that we need to make sure that that money gets in the hand of community leaders who are already active, who are already making a difference, who want to push our communities further, and who really want to do the work. And so if this grant is giving that to those people, then I am more than elated at the opportunity to watch them serve.
And all right, well, you know, just as a point of clarification,
sure,
you know, these bigger organizations in some cases are merely just kind of pass-throughs, where sure, they're getting the money, but then they're kind of handing it down to organizations smaller than them. So Chicago Community Trust, for example, did get $6 million to fund grants under this state-led, what's called a racial healing initiative. But then that money was then dispersed to tons of different organizations to do different programs, including, like, there's murals, there's conversations that are held at libraries. So there's, you know,
all it's... Right. That's a great point of clarification, Tom. Thank you for that. We need to take a break. We're going to continue this conversation with Tom Shuba, Dr. Jermaine Sherrod, about the legalization of marijuana, checking in 2 years after it's become legal in Illinois. More to come. Stay with us. Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just joining us, we're continuing our conversation about legal marijuana, legal cannabis in Illinois. It's been 2 years since it's been legalized for recreational purposes. But as we heard in a clip from the governor earlier, the purpose of the legislation in Illinois was not just to make a product that had been only available illegally available legally. It was really to maximize equity. That was a big goal of the backers in Illinois. And Illinois was the first state to legalize marijuana through a sort of very deliberate process through the legislature as opposed to a ballot referendum. We're speaking about this with Tom Shuba, who covers marijuana in Illinois for the cannabis industry, I should say, for the Chicago Sun-Times as well. And we're also speaking with Dr. Jermaine Sherrod, who's president and CEO of Sherrod's Independent Mentoring Program, known as SIMP, which received a grant under one of the programs that was created as part of the legalization in Illinois. She's also professor of English at Richland Community College, has a PhD in education, instruction, and curriculum. We'd love to have you join our conversation, especially if you have experience with the legal marijuana industry, and maybe you have a contrast you'd like to share with us about how it was before, if you had a sort of, you know, figure out who was safe to obtain this product from before it was legal. Now you can go into a store. We'd love to hear your experiences. 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show. If you just have any question for our guests, again, 800-222-9455. 800-222-9455. All right, Tom, the Pritzker administration has been criticized for the way it's managed the handing out licenses for dispensaries, particularly the so-called equity licenses. Can you maybe just remind us what were the equity licenses and what has been going on with some of the delays and critiques there?
Sure. So the initial round of dispensary licenses, which is what the the new cannabis licenses state decided to start with, getting out first, there were going to be 75 new pot shop licenses to strictly sell recreational weed. The idea was they created kind of a definition of social equity applicant, which you could meet by, meeting certain criteria, like having a prior drug arrest, living in certain areas that have been harmed by, drug enforcement. What wound up happening was there were delays because of COVID. There were concerns about how the grading went. Basically, when the first round of finalists were announced, there was huge outcry among applicants that non-minority applicants and people with political ties largely made up the group. This included groups that had Cook County Commissioner Bridget Degnan. And so there was really this groundswell of opposition. And what happened was Pritzker basically said, pump the brakes, we're going to do a do-over, we're going to make sure that we readdress these applications. And kind of in this interim period, what wound up happening was a trailer bill was introduced and passed that then created 110 additional licenses. And this was, in a sense, done to appease the jilted applicants and to give them more opportunity to have the stake in the industry that they'd been promised. What's happened now is they have held three different lottery drawings to issue those 75 licenses and those 110 licenses, so 185 total new licenses. They remain in limbo because of a court order in Cook County that's now linked to this super case, and it's related to some of these same concerns about how the application process played out. And so that hasn't resolved itself. Individuals and groups know, okay, well, we were named the winner in this lottery. What they don't know is whether those results of those lotteries will be overturned, whether this process will have to be redone as a result of the litigation that's pending. So you have a similar super case playing out that's holding up the next 60 craft grow licenses, which are cultivation licenses. The state did issue 40 craft cultivation licenses, along with some infusion licenses and along with some transportation licenses. But this next round that was supposed to go out in late December of 60 cultivation licenses has similarly been held up by a court order related to another separate super case that was consolidated by the Illinois Supreme Court. So you still have a lot of acrimony, a lot of concern about how this all has played out. And it's something that the governor doesn't particularly address head on much. Mm-hmm. Obviously, cannabis legalization was a big part of his agenda when he was campaigning, but this is definitely kind of a stain on his first term.
Yeah, so I guess the bottom line, what I'm hearing from you, and correct me if I'm wrong, please, is that the big players, the connected players that had were ready to navigate a complicated state bureaucracy involving multiple agencies, were able to get off the ground pretty quickly 2 years ago, and as we said, have generated $2 billion in revenue. While the more, the idea of the mom and pop grower or shop owner from neighborhoods that were disproportionately targeted when marijuana was illegal, they're the ones that are still kind of waiting for the opportunity. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah, that's pretty dead on. I mean, one of the big things about when they legalized recreational marijuana was they gave what was supposed to be a kind of 1 year head start to the existing operators who had grown and sold medical marijuana.
Mm, sure.
For those years when it was medical only, it wasn't particularly lucrative, especially during the Rauner administration. He was pretty against efforts to expand the number of patients, which would expand the amount of money these companies would have made. So I think the idea with that was, give these guys a break because they've invested all this money into infrastructure, into, setting up this pass program, and what's wound up happening is their runway has been much longer than anticipated.
Getting off the ground, longer runway, I like that metaphor. Dr. Jeremy Sherrod, let me ask you, what do you think? I know it's not your area necessarily. You're on the, you work with people in the community trying to improve lives. What do you think though about these opportunities flowing back on the producer side, on the sales side of, flowing back to communities that were disproportionately harmed, that I imagine are some of the communities you're working in?
Well, I definitely think that, and I always say that I am fortunate as many other people to have different governor and all of dignitaries to even think about taking the money and using it in a positive way. So I'm grateful at the opportunity of doing that. More than anything, if this funding was not available, a small business like myself would not be able, and I'm a minority as well, would not be able to make the impact and do the things that we need to do to help solve the problem. I know sometimes people always say, well, throwing money at a situation doesn't solve it. But if it's in the right hands of the right people who really want to make a difference, it does make a difference with that community. And my goal, just like I think many other ones, is to make a bigger impact. So I basically see it being, to me, as a win-win situation. I get to, from my community, who I've done research in, who I know, and who I've invested my time and my effort in, I get to see and listen to other community leaders and say, this is the problem we're having. And I get to then take my expertise, my experience, and work with other community leaders to try to solve that problem, because it definitely takes a community effort. So again, I'm grateful for the opportunity and the funding that comes with this, so that I can not only make a difference from here, but other communities can see what I'm doing, reach out to me, and then say, how can I do that in my community without have to worrying about any financial burdens? And that's what the blessing is in this grant, is that I have the funding to actually go inside of the schools, to go inside of the correctional centers. I have the funding to pay the 20 people that's on our grant that's working with that. And I don't have to worry about, or have a shadow of doubt or worry about any financial burdens connected to it. So I really get to do, and I've taken the money that I've gotten. I haven't gotten as much as other, as the 6 million. I would love to have 6 million, but I've received 100,387. And with that, I've been able to really watch my budget and maximize and do way more things with that money. So it might seem like I have a $6 million impact, but I've been able to definitely use my financial skills to make sure that we're meeting the needs at the best cost possible.
All right, let's go to the phones now. 800-222-9455 is our number. Larry is on line four. I guess Larry is not on line four. I heard a busy signal there. So, Larry, if you're out there from Springfield, call back. We want to hear from you. Tom, what are some of the grants are not just going to community programs like Dr. Sherrod's we've been hearing about. Can you talk about the different kinds of grants that are available through the R3 program, some of the other organizations that have received them sort of at street level, if you will?
Oh, I mean, you know, I wrote about a guy who, like I was saying, there was this $3.5 million for anti-violence programs. There was a guy in North Lawndale who he owns a boxing gym. He used to be kind of a former street guy, and he has turned his life around. And what he tries to do is to, you know, have a positive impact on the youth in North Lawndale. And in doing that this summer, he got a grant for $200,000, or about $200,000. But what he used it for wasn't for the boxing program. It was kind of to do gang intervention. And that's pretty important in an area like North Lawndale in the summer in the city of Chicago, because, you know, the threat of violence is very real on many of these blocks. So what this guy was doing was kind of doing like peace marches through neighborhoods and bringing kids with him, and setting up sit downs between feuding gang factions. And, you know, his grant ran out, it expired. And so the unfortunate thing is, kind of you have this guy kind of build himself up for a while as this community leader and be able to do this kind of really important work, and then it just ends. So I think possibly finding a way to do continuing grants for these sorts of violence initiatives would be helpful. So, you know, there could be stable forces in some of these communities.
Yeah, that's a great point. And then I understand there's a drug addiction intervention effort as well.
Makers
of Narcan. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's 25% of the excise taxes go to the R3 program. Another 20% goes to a program that's dedicated to mental health and drug treatment services. So I think $18 million had been contracted out by the time I did the story. And the biggest chunk, $7 million, went to the producer of Narcan, which, for those who don't know, is an opioid overdose reversal drug. And it's incredibly important, and incredibly important for communities with high rates of overdoses to have it accessible. In the city of Chicago, for example, we're starting to see public libraries carry Narcan. At this point, with what the country and with what major urban areas like Chicago are facing with the opioid crisis, you can never have enough Narcan. So that was an interesting and good thing to see when I was going through kind of the list of how this money has been spent.
Dr. Sherrod, we're almost out of time, just a few minutes remaining, but I understand you grew up on the south side of Chicago. You now live in Macon County, which is where Decatur is located. A lot of time when people talk about, you know, problems in Illinois, they're focusing on places like Chicago for money like this, for example. But can you just talk a little bit about the importance of some of this money going to downstate programs?
Yes. And I'm, like I said, even though I live in Macon County, I still live in Chicago. I still own a residence in Chicago. So I travel back and forth. Now, receiving money down here is good because at least it was spanned out. I know a lot of Chicago organizations that received it. And to go back what Tom just said, once you get the money and the money runs out, that's my concern because, you know, once we start doing such a good job, you know, after this fact, what will happen when the grant does run out, and then, you know, we won't be able to keep up with those same goals, because I have bigger goals and bigger dreams that I definitely want to do. I even looked at trying to do some stuff in Chicago, but even with the R3 grant, once you get it, you have to stay within a zone that you were particularly awarded with. But I think that it's a blessing, like I said, to even receive it down here. I was one of two organizations, but my organization received the largest sum with the first round of R3 for it. And then ours, where Macon County CASA program received it for an employee that they ran a program, we actually received it and received a lot of money. And ours was double from the initial what we asked for. And so we were able to do a lot more with it. But I'm born and raised in Chicago. I spent half of my time in Decatur and half of my time in Chicago. I would love to not only do stuff like that, I have some goals of doing a youth commission, bringing and doing a lot of things since I helped a youth leadership team win the Governor's Cup in 2021 to 2022 as well. So I think the more funding we get, the more opportunities you get for visionaries like myself to daydream and put good hands and good work down on the forefront to be able to do the awesome things that we want to do.
Dr. Jeremy Sherrod is the head of SIMP, the Sherrod's Independent Mentoring Program in Macon County. We've also been speaking with Tom Shuba, Chicago Sun-Times reporter who covers marijuana for the paper. Tom, Dr. Sherrod, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thank you so much for having us.
Coming up after the break, the story of a Central Illinois man, the story of a Central Illinois man who says he had an alleged sighting of Bigfoot made national news recently. We're going to talk with an anthropologist about our fascination with finding the creature and also a man who's been searching for it around the country. That's coming up after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us.